episode of The Art of Living with an amazing host, Inga Young. I hope I'm saying that right. And yours truly, Kerry Lewis, who, you know, is always happy to be here. I'm so excited to be showing up today and every Tuesday at 7 to answer, well, I'm going to ask, Inga is going to answer the questions we have around health and wellness and how we can stay youthful and vitalized and energized as we age through different choices that we make. So Inga, I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yay. So, okay. You are a doctor in acupuncture, if I'm not mistaken. Is this not correct?
I'm an acupuncture physician, yes, okay. and a naturopath.
So, okay, good. So first off, my first question to you would be, what led you down the road to be educated in both acupuncture and naturopath, which I'll ask a little bit more about in a minute?
Well, to the acupuncture, it's a long story. It was, I came to this country because of a romance that, of course, did not work out. And I did not know what to do. I was broke up that relationship, and I was sitting here, and I really had no papers. And I mean, I didn't have work papers or anything. So, but I had to do something, and I was going to go back to art that I had been doing in Venezuela, where I lived before, and was going to make a mural with a friend of mine. This was in Miami. And then I tripped and broke my wrist. Complicated, you know, five-place breakup. So I knew there was no artwork to do. And this was also at the same time that Andrew, it was that big hurricane that came.
Yep.
And well, I had been to this acupuncture school and looked at herbs. And I said, well, I love acupuncture because I used to go for acupuncture regularly to keep my neck in shape and my body and mind in shape. It was, I think, the best thing I really loved it. And I always thought, how would I ever be able to learn all those points? But anyway, I started school. And always something turned up that, you know, I got my papers, and that's another long story. But anyway, I got my work papers, and I studied and worked at the same time. And finally graduated after 3 years as an acupuncture physician. And then much, much further down the road, I started, it was more like a postgraduate for acupuncture, I call it.
Yep.
So, and of course, during that time, I specialized in allergies because I realized, for example, for me, and not only for me, the traditional Chinese medicine, TCM, is considered as a garden. You know, with the liver and the gallbladder, that's the wood. And so we have all these elements of fire, wood, water, metal, and earth.
And they associate with our different body parts in traditional Chinese medicine?
Yeah, the different systems. So the systems in Chinese medicine is, for example, a liver system, which includes liver and gallbladder. They are married or whatever, they're coupled. Yep. And then we have the fire is the heart and the small intestine. Earth is spleen and stomach. And metal is lung and, what is it more? Crazy. And water is kidney and bladder. And lung is, how can I forget that? See,
hey.
A little brain freeze.
You're only 86 years young.
So that's.
Do you know how it was established, each element for the...
Well, it has been, yeah, it is, it's such a long, I mean, it's such an old system. It's probably about 5,000 years old, even though it wasn't acupuncture like that in the beginning, but it developed, I think they developed also that they started to, you know, rub certain things and they saw how it affected other parts. So it developed and developed under many, many years. And then finally they invented, they didn't have needles from the beginning. They had fish bones, for example. Can't even imagine.
But
yes.
Getting stuck with a fish bone for health? I mean, hey, if it's going to
well,
make
but
you feel
stick,
better,
stick
I
them
suppose.
In the, in, I think that was probably pretty painful. But Asian people, Chinese people, Vietnamese people, all these people, they are much, much tougher, especially than Americans. I had once had a, I think she was from Vietnam, a woman. She said, don't you have thicker needles? Twirl them. You know, otherwise for Americans, if little twist you do, they say, hey, it hurts, it hurts.
It's, you know, it's so funny because I, whenever I go to get my blood drawn, they're always like, you know, if you're nervous about needles, look way. And I'm like, have you seen my arms? I mean, I'm covered with tattoos. But interestingly enough, you know, doctors tell me all the time, people who are covered with tattoos still struggle with needles, which I find fascinating because I love watching my blood get drawn.
I don't care at all.
But anyway, we digress. So, okay. So you studied traditional Chinese medicine and you were able to learn about the different parts of our body connecting with different elements.
Yeah, yeah, the
right?
metal, by the way, is lung and large intestine. Duh. Okay.
Gotcha. Yep. I love it. So, okay, what is the practice of acupuncture? So for anybody out there who is unfamiliar or just assumes you're sticking people with needles, can you kind of elaborate on what you do as an acupuncturist and how that benefits an individual's overall wellness?
Well, people come for different ailments. And it is really a long list of from emotional stuff to infertility to just aches and pains in general and digestive problems. Because, you know, as I said, we have small intestine, large intestine, stomach, the spleen, and all these things. The funny thing is that if we talk about diabetes, for example, which has to do with the spleen, the pancreas, in Chinese medicine, they don't have that because they don't have the pancreas. They have the gallbladder, but not the pancreas. But it's the whole system. But the system is exactly the same. It's so funny that they have managed to do a lot of things without, you look at the Western diagnosis and, oh, okay. They had the idea. There was a clear idea of what they were doing and why.
Yeah. So it's interesting because there was no pancreas back in the day. Did that develop?
I don't think they knew about it. It was just the system is living in the spleen, kind of, because that's where also where the pancreas is. So they went after smell of the urine and the reactions, and so they found how people could have. What was it called? I even forgot what that was called. I haven't done that for so long. But it's something with sweet, you know, that the urine smelled sweet. So it was, and they knew they were affected by sugar and sweets. So it's very interesting, really, how they figured everything out.
Yeah. And so, so I do understand that, you know, people can come to go to an acupuncturist for a myriad of reasons. But what is the fundamental premise? Like, what is you sticking me with a needle in my face going to help?
Oh, well, if
with?
You say in the face, we can take, for example, I used to do facial rejuvenation, we call it. And it's really very, very effective. And you put needles on the face and so forth. But what gets better at the same time is the digestive system. So people, because the meridians, some of them start on the face, some on the feet. But for example, the stomach starts here under the eyes and goes down, and it goes down over the neck, over the nipples, and then over the legs, and end up on the second toe. So it affects.
And so, what is
so the meridian? Are these that belong to the system? For example, if we take the stomach meridian, it belongs to the organ stomach. So this is an organ system.
Okay, so it's like a pathway from your face into the actual system
And the spleen starts on the toe and goes up. Well, it ends up on the body.
Gotcha.
So by treating these meridians, you can treat them either if you say the stomach, if it's something they have pain in the stomach, for example. So it can be for the organ that you treat it, but it is also a lot of you can have pain on your thigh or on your knee or your foot. That's where the meridian goes. So you can look on the pathways if it's a gallbladder meridian or the stomach meridian, or so you look at the different pathways. And then you can also ask if there is something wrong with that specific, not wrong, but if they have some kind of trouble with that organ, pain in the liver or something, whatever it is, or pain in the stomach or headaches. Or so there are so many things that.
So what does the needle do? Does it break up energy?
It moves the energy. It moves the energy in the because when there is pain, there is something is stuck. So by using a needle, you make it move. So that's why pain goes away. And of course, sometimes it doesn't happen in one time, and sometimes it does. I had once a guy who came in for sciatica, a policeman. They're carrying a lot of heavy stuff. And he had been suffering from sciatica for quite a while. And I gave him one treatment, never saw him again until he came back. That was later he came back. He had an autistic son, so it's another long story. And I said, how come you didn't come back? Didn't you like the treatment? He said, well, I never had any pain again.
Touché. I love that. That
happens.
Much.
And then sometimes that does not happen. And people come back for the same thing. And then I look more into allergies. So it can be often food allergies, because you can look at the same thing. You look at the meridians. Okay, somebody has a pain on the shoulder. It can be the gallbladder or the large intestine, all these different meridians. And then you can check if it has to do with the digestion. Because I believe.
Yes, so we're definitely going to get into food allergies. We got lots of shows to share that. But I want to, so clarifying for the listening audience and myself, the needles from acupuncture are able to break up the blocks, which is energy, which I know from my own work that energy is trapped for a myriad of reasons, including emotional trauma, right? That isn't expressed, which then manifests into physical ailments. And so the acupuncture allows that energy to be released, similar to myofascia, which I know I get my fascia massages where they break up the energy within the fascia that covers our body, which is also known to trap energy and like traumatic experiences, like the energy that's cultivated while we're moving through a traumatic experience.
I think probably everything is in one way or other related to some kind of emotion. Trauma or stress or 100%. Anything. There are so many things we go through and don't know we go through them, and maybe they don't get solved when we think we go through them.
Yeah, which is why I am a huge proponent of honoring my feelings regardless, even if I feel like I could be perceived as or I'm overreacting to something small, which is what I hear a lot of people say. I just, if I need to cry, I'm going to cry. If I'm going to be frustrated, I'm frustrated. And I work to not make up a story about it and just release that energy so it doesn't trap into my body. But anyway, pivoting a little bit. So then you shared with the listening audience, you're a naturopath?
Yeah, that's, I'm not a naturopathic doctor. I wish I were, but that's a four-year education. So this is more a build-up, 18 months course I took.
Yep.
And just kind of opening the view on other stuff. It's a little bit more, in a way, you look more at genes and blood tests. And so it's a little different. It's not only holistic. Okay. And people today, they kind of want to see tests and proof.
I mean, for me, proof isn't feeling better, but I totally get it, right? So what exactly is a naturopath? So they examine the genetic makeup of an individual?
There are so many different... I concentrate more on food and nutrition, and sometimes it can be due to genes, and you can avoid certain things if you know your genetic makeup. But for me, it's mostly nutrition and what goes around with that. Digestion, nutrition, and how the brain and emotions have to do with the digestive system. It's a big, big thing. People don't think, it's not easy to know either. But for example, if somebody feels real bad, they go and get some comfort food, mostly sugar. And well, that makes their digestive system very sad and sick. And the connection with the vagus nerve, which is the longest nerve in our body, that starts in the head and goes through the ear, and then it goes through the face also, and then it goes down both sides of the body and end up in the digestive system, in the gut. So if the gut is not feeling good, the head is not feeling good either. So I always say that when people go to a shrink and you get the medicine, they are looking in the wrong place.
Yeah, I will say that there is a guy named Daniel Amen that I like a lot, because he is a rogue in many senses within the psychiatric world, because he challenged the fact that we're so quick to offer up medication for the brain, yet it's the only part of the body that we don't scan. So we just start handing out these meds that alter the brain chemistry of an individual without ever really identifying the root cause. It's kind of like trial and error, which to me is cuckoo banana pants, but whatever. So the vagus nerve, what is that exactly responsible for?
It goes through all the parasympathetic and the sympathetic systems, the one that you don't have to think that you're breathing, or you don't have to make your heart beat, and all these things that are subconscious. And then we have the fight and flight system. So these are the two systems that the vagus nerve go through.
Yeah. Which would explain why there are so many people struggling with anxiety, because I imagine if our gut is responsible for feeding our brain, the vagus nerve, and the food that we're taking in lacks nutrients, then we would absolutely be impacted by that, causing us to, be in a heightened state, which our fight or flight response is already heightened.
Absolutely. Right? And all the fast food and processed food that most people eat, and unfortunately the kids too, and they have no nutrients. They have a lot of toxins in them. They are not clean. They have additives and color and nothing good for the body to feel good, to feed the brain, to feel, you know. And people today, they don't feel good.
They don't. So it's interesting. So I was talking to my brother-in-law. So if you're watching this, I'm sorry, I'm throwing you under the bus, but I love you dearly. He's like one of the best people I know. But he was telling me, you know, I feel fine. So why would I change my diet? And what I challenged him to is I would bet that the average American doesn't realize how crappy they feel because they've never had a clean diet. And so you hear about all these people who go overseas, they eat pasta from Italy, they drink wine, they, you know, eat all these food, and they don't have the same reactions to the food as we do in America, and oftentimes come back saying that they felt like $100. And then we come back to the food that we take in America and we feel like crap. So I'm betting that we really have no true sense of what wellness feels like based on the food that we take in.
No, that is so true. And also here in America, so many more toxins and additives and crap is added to our food that is banned in Europe and other countries.
I know, which is wild to me because we seem to be okay with it.
Yeah. Well, it's people are not informed either.
It is about information, and I agree. So I shared with the listening audience on another show. I just went through 24-hour fast. Now, there's a couple of reasons why I went through fast, but primarily the reason I go through fast is because I want to build up my mid-cingulate cortex, which is responsible for willpower and resilience. And so I often put myself through things that feel hard to make myself like cultivate that muscle. However, I also know there are a lot of health benefits to fasting, and I want to know what your take is on fasting and what you know about how fasting or even intermittent fasting can help support the healthy, like the wellness of our body, the organs in our body.
Well, the body needs a certain amount of time. So that, for example, the one intermittent fasting that's very good to do is don't eat after 7 o'clock and not before 12 to 14 hours later in the morning. So that,
really?
So, and you can have, if you have dinner at 6, then if you have, you can have breakfast at 8, and it's 12 hours in between. That way the body can go in and digest, because it's something with the digestion, with all kind of the different bacteria and enzymes we have, that they eat up in the digestion different things at different times. And some of the food, it takes less time, and other foods maybe take 6 hours to get good bacteria and enzymes to finish digesting. So if you eat, then, for example, some people say, oh, you should eat every 2 hours. And the stomach and the digestion never get the chance to do all its job or to rest. So there are even, I remember there was a series when they started with this intermittent fasting. And one guy, he was going to fast for a month. He was obese. He had diabetes, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and felt like crap. He went on this month-long fasting. He got rid of his overweight. He got rid of his high blood pressure. He got rid of his diabetes.
So we didn't eat for a month.
So that was strong. So, I mean, the first 5 days, I would say they're probably the worst. At least the first three are the worst. And then after 5 days, it doesn't really, you don't really feel it. You feel good. But it's the thing with the first days. That's why it's so hard to start.
But how are they, okay, so a month fasting, how are they getting in nutrients?
Well, I guess he was eating up the nutrients he had on his body. I don't really know. I don't remember if he took vitamins or something. It's very possible he did. But yeah. I think it was a water fast.
Plain water. Well, so that leads me to a question. I know somebody who participates in 72-hour dry fasts, which means they take in absolutely nothing.
I don't really
believe
in that. I think you need water. Of course.
Me too, because our brain needs water. It's a sponge.
So I don't really agree with that, but, we all have different opinions. And my opinion is drink water as much as you can.
Yeah.
That helps for the hunger too. Because often, and that's something often people they eat because they're hungry. No, they're often just thirsty. So if people want to lose weight, don't go for food. First, have a big glass of water, wait half an hour and see what happens.
That's what I tell my kids all the time. And they joke. They're like, oh, mom, you always say have a glass of water. They'll say I have a headache. And I say, well, have you drank water? Yes. Because, again, if we know our brain is a sponge, then we know that the sponge needs water to be able to.
Absolutely.
Work,
otherwise,
right?
It falls to pieces.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so again, for the listening audience, if you have any questions for Inga, Inga is 86 years old and she's thriving, as you guys can see. And she is a myriad of different wisdom with regards to health and wellness. So you're telling me that we should intermittent fast, so we shouldn't eat 14
12
hours.
To 14. I mean, it depends on what the person. And some people, maybe they are used to eat late at night and early in the morning, but just try to little by little lengthen it. Eat earlier in the evening and not so late. And that helps. That helps a lot for weight too. And the brain.
Well, it's also said that, I mean, think about it. When we go to sleep, our body needs time to rejuvenate, but if it's working really hard to digest food while we're sleeping, it's not able to shut down as much as it could in order to rejuvenate itself to really have those optimal.
That is so true. That is so true. It's, the body needs to relax and sleep and not have to work overtime by digesting food.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's pivot. So you talked about, so you practiced acupuncture for many years, but then you realized that certain people were continuously having chronic issues.
Yeah, I found that early on, after. I graduated in 95, and in 98, I started to study about allergies and started to treat allergies. And
so let's talk about that, allergies. Are you just talking about your common, allergic to pollen allergies?
Kind. It can be any kind. But of course, what I saw was, for example, they had this neck pain and it would come back, and that's why I thought there must be something underneath. So when I started to started studying the allergies and starting to treating for allergies, and I look at the different meridians, the gallbladder and all these large intestine and triple burner, and they all go over this area here. And So I started to look more into digestion per se and what it could be that they were allergic to. But there is a system, for example, I have my allergy kit that is kind of built on the same idea like another company or many companies, by the way, by that. There are certain basic allergies. Everybody is, if they're not allergic, they are sensitive to it. So you have to start those things first so that your body can start to build up. But I found, for example, I had once a guy who used to come for acupuncture like once or twice a year, mostly for his neck. And one time he came without an appointment. Somebody drove him. He had a sciatic attack. He could hardly walk. And I did 4 different acupuncture treatments. Nothing helped. So, you know, my little brain going. And sciatica is most of the time over the gallbladder meridian that starts here and goes back and forth over the head, over the shoulder, over the back, over the butt, and down the side of the leg, and ends up on the second to the little toe. And I said, do you drink coffee? Because coffee is an irritant to the gallbladder. And he said, oh, it's funny that you ask that, because this was, you know, here close to Miami. And it was winter, so I think it was like 66 degrees. So it was cold. So his boss had given him a double Cuban coffee, you know, strong. And 2 hours later, he turned and pulled down an empty box from a shelf and came like here and couldn't move. Could not move. So I treated him for allergy to coffee. And within 5 minutes, the pain was gone.
So let me ask you this, because I'm a coffee lover, Inga. Is it coffee or is it caffeine?
Or is there a difference? You can drink tea with caffeine. It doesn't matter. It's the coffee per se, unfortunately. Everybody loves coffee, almost.
Oh, in America, yeah. I mean, that's such a hard pill to swallow. So if I were to pivot from coffee to something else.
Have it once a day, not more. Especially I have another patient and he used to drink coffee during the day all day long. And he had a sciatica he could not get rid of. And I told him, I said, stop that coffee. And he finally did. And the sciatica went away. He still has a slight thing there, but so then it started again. I said, are you drinking coffee again? He said, yeah. More than one cup? Yes. Well, now you know.
Yeah, well, it's true. Contrast. You got to have that contrast. Okay, so you establish that this gentleman has an issue. He's having a sciatic attack based on coffee. This kind of gets into a little bit of energy work, right? Because if I'm not mistaken, you treated him for the coffee allergy.
With needles and moxa and all kinds of stuff, yes.
So share with the listening audience how you heal people through your allergy kit, which is based in frequencies, yes. Right?
Energetic frequencies. So I use vials that have the energy imprinted, like homeopathically imprinted into the vials. So it is, you know, homeopathy means like cures like. So if you have an allergy to one of these things, what is in here? I can't see. And you have the same energy in your body because you have the allergy to whatever this here is, I can't even see what it is. It's coffee.
Yeah.
So then you use that same energy on your body, and the treatment is that you use this one. It worked before, but
Red light therapy.
Yeah. So you use that. You shine it over the belly button, and then over the head, ears, and belly button. You go and you do that 7 rounds. You go over the head 7 times. 1, 2, and so on. So it takes about 10 minutes to do the treatment. And this makes the allergy that, you know, these waves are not there anymore, those frequencies. So you have no allergy to it anymore. And it works. It's amazing how it works.
Well, so, okay. So could hypothetically the person who had sciatica, who kept drinking coffee, get treated for the algae and then just go back to drinking coffee?
Well,
does it work that
with
way?
With some things it does, and sometimes it doesn't. I can take myself as an example. I had pain on my hip. For years I couldn't sleep on my sides. And I asked my chiropractor and he said, "Well, you're getting old." And I said, "So why does it happen at sometimes and other times I don't feel anything?" Even though I couldn't, I mean, that was when I was walking. When I was sleeping, it was always on my side. And I had treated myself for the bile, but the thing with the hip, that some all of a sudden I could just hardly walk. That's how much hip pain I had on my hips. It happened that we had a lot to do, so we went out for breakfast or for lunch 3 times in the same week. Italian Salvatorian restaurant, and they used to cut the bread, slice of bread thinly, and then they flattened it, and then they toasted it, hard toast. I like it hard toasted. And then with chimichurri on top of it. The third time we went in, I was fine when I came in. Sat down at the table, nothing wrong. I had 2 slices of that bread. And I didn't realize it until I got up or tried to get up from the table. I could hardly get up from the table from the pain. That's when I realized it was the wheat. So I treated myself for wheat and it went away. But it came back. And every time I treated myself, but every time I had to treat myself more. So I realized I just had to stop to eat wheat. Not the gluten, it's the wheat. In Europe, in Israel, for example, I could eat all kinds of bread. Here, I cannot.
And that is because?
Because the wheat is hybridized, and I think now they even allowed it to be GMO, gene manipulated. And that means that it has toxins in it, and they can spray it so much more. So it's totally toxic.
So GMOs allowed the food to be sprayed more with like Roundup?
They can tolerate much more. They can tolerate much more.
Interesting.
And some of them have, the gene is, for example, an insect inside. It's the gene from an insect. So if that insect comes and tries to eat the whatever has been sprayed, they explode, their stomachs explode. So don't you think that does something to us? How can we be unaffected?
Wait a minute. The Roundup or the chemicals that they spray?
No, not that, but some foods that are gene manipulated. They split it with another gene, with something else's gene, sometimes with an insect, sometimes. You know, they have all kinds, you have to read about it. It's so many things they have played with. But one of the things is for the insects, so that the insect directly die when they go on these foods that are gene manipulated with their gene. And I mean, how can that be good for us? Can't we have just normal food?
Well, then one would argue, like, how do you grow enough sustainable food for the population that exists? But that's a
well, but they have proven. I mean, they have mega bugs. So there are big areas that I believe that they cannot grow on anymore and also because they grow the same thing year after year. I mean, it's everything is so totally against nature.
Nature, yeah. You're 100% right. Okay, well, but this is the art of living, and we want our audience to feel that they have information that can help them live well. So what are some suggestions you have for the listening audience if they are finding themselves in either chronic pain or struggling to understand what it is they should be buying? Because that's the thing, right? I reached out to you last week. I was so excited, everybody. It's like, oh, I found this candy that's sugar-free, and I'm super happy because I love dark chocolate. Come to find out that sugar alcohol derived from corn, which I know corn reduces into sugar in the first place. So it's a total manipulation of the information on the ingredient package. So what are some tips and tricks that you can offer to the listening audience that can help inform them or help them make more informed choices?
I think the first they can do is to write down everything that goes into their mouth. Even, you know, maybe have a little app or something. You just talk it into the phone so you have it there. And then you can go back and see when you feel yucky or bad or tired or good, just to figure out what foods make you feel optimal and what foods don't. And of course, cut down on sugar and wheat is even higher on the glycemic index than sugar.
So we talked about wheat being toxic essentially for you because of the chemicals that used to produce and the fact that it's genetically modified.
Not only that, it's that they spray, for example, they spray, I'm sure they spray it through during they grow, when it grows also, but they spray wheat a couple of days before they harvest it so that the leaves will fall off. And that goes straight up to the kernels. And then they harvest the kernels. Yeah. So they are full of Roundup. Plus wheat has a protein in it that turns it into something called zonulin, which is something that makes holes in the intestinal lining. So you get leaky gut. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of things with wheat. I mean, if you can eat the original, organic, old-fashioned wheat, if there is any to get anymore, I don't know. But at least cut down, because we were not meant to eat bread or wheat 4 or 5 times a day. And I think a lot of people do. They eat bread in the morning, and then they're hungry 20 minutes after and want to eat again. Or the kids eat wheat, and they are tired in the morning because it makes them sleep. So have a real breakfast, eat eggs and something else, you know, maybe leftovers from the day before, chicken or even bacon is better than bread.
Interesting. Well, see, you'll be very proud of me, Inga. I had a bacon hamburger tonight, but I had it wrapped in a lettuce.
Perfect.
So, I only ate half of it. That's the other thing. And yet, I will say, I still felt like crap.
Yeah, you should probably have had something much, much easier to digest, like a little overcooked rice and a little chicken, maybe.
Is rice good for you? See, I never know.
Well, you never know. I know now they're talking so much about arsenic and blah, blah. It's hard to say, but white rice, at least if it is overcooked and if you have a sensitive stomach or you're trying to get over something, that is very easy to digest for your system.
Overcooked white rice.
You know, if people feel bad or they have had some kind of stomach flu or something, to get back, it's better to have overcooked rice and maybe, you know, chicken soup.
I love, you know what? This is on a tangent, but my ex-husband won me over to date him because I was sick in bed. And after working like a 12-hour day, he went home and made homemade chicken noodle soup and brought it to me. And I said, oh my God, this is love. I mean, who does that? But anyway, okay. So, but going back, so we've talked and established about wheat. Let's talk about sugar. Like, is all sugar bad for you? Refined sugar, you know, kind of give us a breakdown on why sugar is harmful to our body.
Well, it is not only sugar, but sugar raises your blood sugar. And it seems like there are 8 to 9 out of 10 people that have some kind of metabolic syndrome. Which means that they are either have a too big waist, or they have high blood pressure, or they have high blood sugar. You know, these are things you're not supposed to have. And the first sign, really, of blood sugar imbalance is a belly. If you have a belly, that's a sign that you have to start to look at what you're eating. Eat less carbs and less wheat, definitely. And no sugar, as little sugar as possible. I use myself, I use stevia. And sometimes I use other sugars like coconut sugar or monk fruit. So there are a couple of other sugars that are not as bad. I mean,
so coconut sugar is okay, because I did find a chocolate made with coconut sugar, but it said that it reduces down to sugar.
Well, it probably does. I mean, it is a sugar after all, but it's not as bad as high fructose sugar or these, refined sugars. Plus, sugar is also GMO, and you don't want that.
So, from my understanding, sugar causes inflammation, and like I feel it. So I feel if I eat a lot of sugar, I feel it in my fingers. Like they just kind of feel a little sore or sticky. But I always tell myself, listening audience, I'm learning right along with you. This is one of the reasons I'm here having this show. Is I said to Inga, I'm like, I'm selfish. I'm capitalizing on all the wisdom you've acquired for 86 years. But I imagine that that's probably making my brain inflamed if it's inflaming my
fingers. It's the same with wheat. Does exactly the same thing.
And then inflammation obviously is responsible for, I believe, isn't it autoimmune disorders?
Or a lot of things, yes, absolutely. But... absolutely. And,
All right.
And inflamed gut is an inflamed brain, absolutely.
Yeah. So we've given the listening audience a lot of information today, not meant to scare you, just for you all to make another informed choice, right? At least to start small. And, you know, for me, I always encourage my clients, don't feel like you have to hit the whole staircase. Like you just simply don't. That feels too much. But, you know, for you, you said that some of the strategy is either reduce wheat and or sugar. Not in one fell swoop, but maybe incorporating one small change in the morning, having a cooked breakfast rather than cereal, right? Because I imagine it's cereal.
Yeah, and also, because it is also, everything is so sweet here. People are used to everything being sweet. And the idea is really to get yourself used to having things less sweet. So that it's more natural to get rid of those sugar cravings. And the thing with sugar craving, it's also because of Candida albicans, which is overgrowth of bacteria. And it's a double-edged sword, you know?
Well, because Candida feeds off the sugar, but when you don't feed it causes you to,
because they're sitting down there in your intestines saying, we are dying, we are dying, give us sugar.
Yeah, 100%. So it can be really tricky. So what are your thoughts about fruit then? Just regular old fruit.
It depends on how bad you are. Look at your tongue. If you have a big fat white coating on your tongue, then you have to try to eat less sugar until that disappears, you know, because that is...
Is my tongue white?
No, it looks pretty good.
Okay. No, but you know what? Like, we're laughing, but it's interesting. Back in the day, right, you were telling me when you were young, when you saw the doctor, they would say, take off all your clothes, and they would just be able to examine, like, your tongue and the way your skin looks. And, you know, and all of those are indicative of different health issues, but we don't really think about that. Even, you know, think about toe fungus or all these different things. All of that is kind of indicators that we need to make an adjustment.
Toe fungus is an overgrowth of bacteria, of candida. It's just that it is so much that, I think that's why it's so hard for people to get rid of toe fungus, because it starts in the gut, not on the toes.
Yeah, interesting. Wow. But that's the thing is starting really, really small.
And be conscientious about it. Think about it.
Yeah. 100%. Well, I'm just glad I don't have to give up my fruit, because quite frankly, I really love pineapple.
Yeah, they are very sweet. So you just, you know, you don't have to eat the whole thing. Well, that's hard too, because your tongue gets kind of... sore if you eat too much pineapple. Yeah.
What, pineapple? Oh, I know. It's tangy.
Yeah.
I love it. So for the listening audience, Inga and I are super excited to give an hour of our time every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to really help you get more informed about questions you have about your health, you know, whether it is around physical health, nutrition,
emotional health, anything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then for me again, your mental health, like strategies and practices that can help you, because nothing is separate. Mind, body, spirit, you know, what you're putting into your body, it through food is impacting your emotional health, but also the reality is the experiences that we are allowing ourselves to exist in also impact our emotional health. So how can you make micro changes so that you can start to feel better, mind, body, and spirit? And so we want you to ask us questions, whether you email us, whether you message us on our social media pages, or you are comfortable enough to leave a message while we're live. We're happy to respond to any questions or thoughts or concerns you have, so that this is an interactive and meaningful dialogue for you, that you're getting something out of it. Additionally, I would encourage you to share this video if you found it at all informative, and to let your friends know, you know, that there are people out there who are just here to offer up wisdom. Whether you take it or leave it, there is power in learning. It took me 25 years from the time I started really studying psychologies and philosophies and theologies, to put those practices into actual place, so that I could experience the freedom of suffering that I had experienced for many, many years. So even if you just sit and listen and absorb without taking action, that too is helping you. So please feel free to tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Is there anything you want to impart on the listening audience today?
I just wish we have interactive audience. I mean, I'm looking forward to be able to talk to people, because it makes it more interesting too, with different aspects on what we can talk about. I mean, there are so many things.
100%. Yeah, and I think next week I'd love for you to share more about energy, because I think that it is on the forefront of discovery, you know, quantum physics, and I mean, there's so much information out there now. And yet, it is still very misunderstood, and if not misunderstood, unknown. A lot of people have no idea what I'm talking about when I talk about their energetic.
Yeah, and other people also, they think it's woo-woo. But, I mean, can you see electricity? Can you see gravity?
It's true.
And everything.
Can you alter your heartbeat? Like, I mean, I guess you can slow it down, but you're not stopping that bad
no,
boy.
No, hopefully not.
Not if you want. But no, it's true. And I think it is really important to continue the conversation around energy, because it's where science is taking us anyway. If you're out there and you have resistance to the idea of us being energy and healing through energy, use ChatGPT. Ask some questions. What are these crazy ladies talking about? And you'll learn for yourself that this is a way of the future. I mean, I laugh because if you think about Star Trek way back in the 70s, right? And they had those photon medical devices, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous back when I was a little girl. My dad was watching Star Trek. But now it doesn't seem so far-fetched, especially when we're looking at the red light that people are going to. And all these different modalities people are starting to lean into to for optimal wealth.
Yeah. Health, and you look wealth, at Tesla, for example, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, he said the future is frequencies. Everything is frequencies, is what he said. And Einstein said the future is in medicine frequencies.
Yeah. So, and that was way, 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 way back. And so just keep my ask of anybody watching this is to simply keep an open mind, even if it's to experience resistance. My favorite is when people have a resistance to what I'm sharing with them, because that's telling you that it's something for you to examine, right? Anytime I'm like, ooh, that's bringing up some defensiveness in me. Well, what have I got to examine? And just keep an open mind and see where the conversation takes you. But until next time, Inga, I just am so, so truly honored to be able to share this time and space with you and to learn from your 86 years of wisdom. And for the listening audience, thank you for spending an hour of your time with us. I believe in energy, and I understand that by you showing up, you're offering an energetic exchange to Inga and myself, and that is a gift that I am just beyond humbled and appreciative for. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Until next time, guys, next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And please, if you have any questions, reach out to Inga or myself, and we'll be glad to address it on the show and or via an email. Bye.